Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach integrier- und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Hello and welcome to another episode of No Such Thing as a Fish, coming to you from the QI offices in Covent Garden. My name is Anna Toshinsky and I'm sitting here with Anne Miller, James Harkin and Alex Bell. And once again, we have gathered around the microphones with our four favourite facts from the last 7 days. And in no particular order, here we go, starting with Anne's facts.
My fact is that Ruby, a sheep who had been genetically engineered to glow in the dark, was accidentally sold to an abattoir.
So you would have thought if you've genetically engineered a sheep, you're keeping pretty close tabs on it.
Apparently not.
How did that happen?
Well, actually, it may have been an insider job. It may have been someone with a grudge against the company.
What, one of the other sheep?
Yeah. It's very cloak and dagger stuff. So this is the National Institute for Agricultural Research in Paris. And they actually, it was Ruby's mother, Emerald, was given this jellyfish gene, which makes her glow in the dark. And then Emerald had a lamb, Ruby, who had the same gene, but I'm not sure if it was active or she actually was glowing. But it was revealed this year that last year, Ruby, made it into the food chain. And they've been very quick to reassure people that they weren't at risk. If you ate Ruby, you're all right. But somebody did buy her. Someone did eat her.
We are constantly making animals glow in the dark these days. And it's always for apparently scientific purposes. But I'm so suspicious. And also, it's always bloody jellyfish, isn't it? They're,
yeah.
I think sometimes anemones, but usually we just seize a jellyfish from the sea, take its genes out, inject them into something. They must be so fed up with it.
It's because jellyfish have this particular protein called GFP, which stands for...
green fluorescent protein.
Yep. This particular protein, when you put it into other animals, it doesn't really have any other effect on the animal, or hardly anything anyway, and so it's quite safe. There are other animals which have these kind of proteins, but they're not quite as useful, really.
Yeah, they use it as a marker so they can see what happens to the cells. They can use it in stem cell research and they are monitoring.
Well, in 2011, scientists created kittens which glow in the dark in order to help fight AIDS, because apparently FIV, which is the feline immunodeficiency virus, is very similar to HIV. And so it was apparently legitimate to make kittens glow in the dark. I think it's legitimate anyway, just to do that.
Yeah. When we say glow in the dark, it does annoy me because it's not like you turn the lights off and they glow, is it? You actually have to put UV light on them, which is so different.
Scorpions glow in the dark under UV light.
Naturally.
Yeah.
Didn't
so they'd be pretty cool to take to a nightclub.
What if you want more personal space on the dance floor? Yeah. Got my scorpion here.
Gin and tonic also glows in the dark under UV light, and I know which I'd rather have.
Yeah.
Scorpion, yeah.
Yeah.
So on sheep, they recognise each other's faces, don't they, apparently?
But not when they get sheared.
Yeah, so this really confuses me. When they're sheared, they have to re-establish a different hierarchy and fight again to be leaders because they don't recognise each other. But I would have thought if you're recognising faces...
I was just relatedly, I guess, I was reading this week that in chickens or in roosters, the first chicken to go cock-a-doodle-doo in the morning is always the most dominant one. And if you get rid of the most dominant one, then it will be the second most dominant who does the cock-a-doodle-dooing.
And sheep, they're much clever. Well, I guess we say this about all animals that we think are idiots and we revise it, but sheep are cleverer than people give them credit for,
Dan,
I think.
Dan is much cleverer than you give him credit for.
It will never happen with Dan Schreiber. He's the exception that proves the rule. So they are one of only two animals, I think, who can recognize shapes and remember shapes really quickly. So they're better at monkeys than at doing this. So if you give them like food in different shape buckets and you put food in one bucket but not in another, then they'll remember the right shape bucket that it's been in and then come
and
back
to the animals,
next day.
Humans.
The other animals, most humans can do that. Again, with Dan, I would question it.
The majority of humans.
The movie Predator came out in 1987, and the blood of the predator is kind of glow in the dark, and the way they made it was mixing KY jelly with green glow stick fluid.
Really?
Mm. Yeah.
Fun trip to the shops for that intern.
Yeah. You would definitely use the
self-scanner,
wouldn't
you? Yeah.
Unexpected items.
The fluid is called BIS-245 trichlorophenol 6-carbopentoxyphenol oxalate.
Catchy.
Snappy.
Sialum for short.
Do you know there's an ice cream company called Lick Me, I'm Delicious, who make a glow-in-the-dark ice cream?
Really?
It uses the same jellyfish protein, which I reckon it gives off a glow when it touches your tongue, but it'll cost you about 140 quid a scoop. So
wow,
maybe we could share one rather than one each.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
How do they make it glow, do you say?
They use the jellyfish.
Oh, they should have done it in jelly rather than ice cream, shouldn't they?
Yeah. Hey. Maybe that's what jelly is. It's just jellyfish with their legs pulled off. That's why it always stings your mouth a bit. Anybody else?
That's why you have to urinate on your mouth whenever you've eaten jelly.
I kept wondering why people were always doing that to me.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Okay, time for fact number two, and that is Alex.
My fact this week is that during the launch of BBC Two in 1964, a live kangaroo got stuck in a lift at Television Centre.
And I assume its tiny arms couldn't reach the buttons?
No, well, there was a massive power cut just before they went on air. There was a fire at Battersea Power Station, half of London lost power, and the whole night was just a massive disaster.
Wait, well, what happened to the kangaroo?
It was the mascot of BBC Two, basically. So there was a big run-up to this launch, and the publicity campaign centred around a kangaroo with a joey coming out of its pouch, because it was the second channel. Mm-hmm. So the BBC decided to get a live kangaroo in as part of the opening night.
It'll probably be W1A. I mean, it does sound like a W1A plot, doesn't it?
It does, kangaroo. Yeah. I think a bit crazier. I mean, this is all according to the biography of Gerald Priestland, who was a BBC newsreader. The first time he delivers his news bulletin, they get through like 2.5 minutes, and then they realise there's no sound going out, so he has to start again. and then there's lots of awkward pauses. A phone is sitting on his desk, and it rings, and he picks it up, and there's no one there.
Is it true that the first words that were spoken were a news story about a bus conductress who had been sacked for insulting Pakistani passengers, and that it included the words that she'd used to insult said passengers? I read
and
that
then the
online.
Next news story was about that last news story, also including the words they'd used. A second newsreader has been fired for again saying.
Didn't they have to scupper all their big sort of launch events? They were going to have like Kiss Me Kate songs from the musical. They were going to have the top comedian from the Soviet Union. I think all the plans went away and they had to end up, the first thing they showed properly was Play School the next day.
The whole evening was just test cards on the screen and people apologising from the BBC. I think it's a great BBC programme. I think more BBC should do more of that.
I read this thing about, there was a thing on the BBC in the early days called the Toddler Truce, where there was, so kids' TV was on from 5 till 6, and then they would have nothing from 6 till 7. So I think to say to the kids, oh look, the TV's off, you got to go to bed now. And yeah. So they didn't have anything on for this hour. And it ended in February 1957 when they brought in a teen
when
show.
When everyone went to bed.
And they brought out a news show for teenagers called the 6-5 Special. And I just love this opening bit because it just sounds so 50s, where it opened with this line, welcome aboard the 6-5 Special. We've got 100 cats jumping here, some real cool characters to give us the gas, so just get on with it and have a ball.
Great.
Wow. Even then they're out of touch.
These yeah. days you would think there were actual cats though, wouldn't
jumping.
You?
Jumping. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to, it sounds like a precursor to the internet, that programme, if you're taking it literally.
And now our troop of dancing felines.
Speaking of which, there was a channel on cable in America called the Puppy Channel, which was a 24/7 network showing nothing but puppies. This was, I think, in the 90s or maybe 2000s. And of course, it just went out as soon as the internet came and you could get as many puppies as you want whenever you wanted.
Oh no, the sad fate of all porn magazines.
So, isn't there a QI fact about the most watched channel in most countries is the weather forecast?
I've read that in the government meteorology site, and I haven't been able to find it anywhere else, but I decided I trust the government.
But the meteorology department, so they like
say, they do say, it does say in most countries the weather forecast is the most watched programme. But it's hard to find like what the definition of the most watched program would be. Or
speaking of most watched, I reckon the most repeated television program ever is on BBC Two.
QI.
Constant. No. It's not. No. Contrary to what the Guinness Book of World Records says, and what we said on QI as well. So we said in Series G that it was a short film called Dinner for One,
yeah,
which is massive in Germany. They watch it every holiday. And that's approaching, I think, 300 repeats in total. But I was reading about this thing called trade test transmissions, which were these films broadcast in the early days of BBC Two. They were designed to fill the channel with nice, vibrant, varied colours, which TV manufacturers and retailers could use to test their televisions. But they were very popular among normal viewers as well. The most repeated one is apparently a documentary about dam building called The Captive River. This is according to the Test Card Circle, which is a group of enthusiasts in early UK television. They're really cool. I'm a member. Don't laugh at them.
Yeah,
no,
I was
going to
ask if you're the president. So.
In the same way that I don't believe the meteorologists that their show is the most popular, I don't believe you that these guys are really cool. You have ulterior motives, Alex.
Okay. It was this film, according to them, was repeated almost 550 times over 12 years, partly due to the fact that in 1963, a huge fan of the film's director locked himself in the ops room at the BBC and block played The Captive River until he was rugby tackled to the ground and eventually deported. Would you like to hear some early alternatives to the word television from the 1920s, which died out? Telectroscopy, visual listening, hear-seeing, radio movies.
I like visual listening, as if they didn't have the word watching.
Yeah.
In the 20s.
What you do with your ears, but with your eyes.
There was a big discussion as to what they were going to call people who watch television as well, wasn't it? Like viewers or watchers or... Yeah, there were loads of different alternatives.
Visual listeners. In October 1983, when the email was just starting to be a thing, there was a two-hour programme on the BBC which was to demonstrate little-known technology, and it demonstrated the first email ever shown on the BBC.
83.
Yeah, I know, it's so
That's
weird, isn't it?
Really early.
So weird. But before they were transmitting the programme, one of the tech guys shouted the password to the email account over to someone else. This was overheard by two sort of coder computery guys, and so they hacked into the email, and so live on TV in 1983, the first BBC email said to
the
presenters...
Do you want a bigger cock? No, what was it?
What did it say? Okay.
They were called Oz and Yug, and they left them a song saying, try his first wife's maiden name. This is more than just a game. It's real fun. Questionable. but just the same, it's hacking, hacking, hacking.
Hacking, hacking,
terrible.
Hacking.
What a waste of a hack.
The first HD channel in the Philippines was called Balls. Just a fact.
Do you know why it was?
Yeah, because it was a sports channel. London Live, the TV channel, in its first month, on 8 separate occasions, its morning TV show was broadcast for a full hour to no measurable audience.
What?
And in 2010, S4C, the Welsh TV channel, they got zero viewers for 196 of their 890 programmes.
Oh my God.
Isn't that so depressing? Just think all the effort, the studio being set up, everyone doing makeup and everything.
But were the actual programmes, were they your test cards on repeat? Yeah, we've seen this one. I'm not watching it again.
Well, yet again, we seem to have a viewership of one. A man in London.
Screw you. There's over 200 members, guys.
Speaking of these kind of clubs, it just reminds me, there was a club called, I think they're called the White Dot Club. I remember this from when I used to work for a pub company.
Mm.
And they used to go around trying to turn off TVs in pubs because they thought it was antisocial, people watching football or whatever, and they should be talking to each other. And they would have these like universal remote controls and then turn off the football when people were watching it, just to stop people from watching TV.
My friend had one of those in school and he'd turn on TVs.
Turn on TVs.
He would turn on TVs in the classroom when no one was watching.
He was the opposite of this group.
I like the Alex's idea of having like a gang of like rivals with the chat. We're going back and putting them on with their universal remote. Yeah. They're just coming back again.
Or you're watching like the World Cup semi-final on a massive screen and then suddenly someone puts on this BBC Two documentary.
Guys, the test card's back on.
All right, moving on to fact number three, and that is my fact. My fact this week is that Dr. Seuss once wrote a Warner Brothers film that was banned because it accidentally predicted the Manhattan Project. So between 1943 and 1945, the British government enlisted Warner Brothers to produce these propaganda cartoons which show the adventures of this guy called Private Snafu, as in Snafu, which...
Situation normal, all effed up.
All effed up, indeed. And he was just this completely cack-handed military man, Captain Snaffer, who kept on letting all the military secrets spill and messing everything up. And yeah, there was this one film which they wrote, and it was called Going Home. So Snafu takes a date to the local cinema, and this film shows a news flash which says US secret weapon blasts Japs, because you said that in those days. And then Private Snafu leans over to his girlfriend and spills all these secrets about how they were making the bomb to her. And it was incredibly close. It sort of completely paralleled what the Americans were working on at the time.
Do you think what they were worried about is that the Japanese would see this cartoon and think, oh my God, that's what they're going to do?
Well, I don't know. It's a good point, because they did prevent them from making it. But yeah, what did they fear? Were the Japanese really going to think, I bet if the US was going to attack us, they'd broadcast it in a film a year earlier?
But making a cartoon of it as well, which is traditionally kind of really stupid escapades that would never happen in real life.
Could be a double bluff.
Yeah. Mm.
But it must have been confusing for the makers, who obviously had absolutely no idea why they were told their film couldn't get made. And the coincidence is bizarre when you look at the plotline of the film. But it was quite interesting, this project, and it involved all the big shots of Hollywood. So the voice of Snafu was Mel Blanc, who obviously is Bugs Bunny and loads of other Warner Brothers characters. And yeah, Dr. Seuss wrote most of the film shorts, so it's thought that he almost certainly wrote that one.
So Anne, one of the last times you were on the podcast, you took exception to Dr. Seuss, didn't you?
Yes.
Dr. Seuss.
I've done further research into this, actually. And while it is originally Dr. Seuss, because that's how he would have pronounced it, once it sort of started getting bigger in America, he apparently took on the rhyming with goose, Zeus to rhyme with goose, because it was easier for kids.
Yeah, and also he kind of liked the association with Mother Goose, because he was a children's writer.
Oh, really?
He wasn't even a real doctor. Maybe that's a bit obvious, but he was. As in, he didn't have a doctorate.
Amazingly, neither is Dr. Dre, Dr. Fox.
I wasn't absolutely sure. I thought maybe he is a doctor. Maybe he did a physics degree or something like that.
It's because I was picturing you like as a GP when you said it. Going, what's wrong with me? I cannot tell you, but let me tell you a rhyme. It'll fix it most of the time. Apparently, he and a friend invented a thing which sounds purely terrifying, called the Infantograph, that they wanted to build for the World Fair. They never actually built it, but it was a thing to, you would go with your boyfriend and it would show you what your child might look like.
Ooh.
I think that sounds creepy.
Yeah, I swear the internet can probably do that kind of thing these days.
They do.
You see it on Facebook, don't you?
Yeah.
Maybe my friends have actually had children.
James keeps leaving messages to his married friends going, oh, don't do that. It'll turn out dreadfully.
Lucky you tested it out first.
So age 14, Dr. Seuss, he worked for the Boy Scouts, and the Boy Scouts at that time were made to or were asked to sell war bonds to help the war effort. And he was one of the top 10 sellers in his Boy Scout battalion or whatever they come in. And this meant that he got to meet the president. So Teddy Roosevelt gave out 10 medals to the top 10 sellers of war bonds. But what happened? It's so sad. Teddy Roosevelt up on stage was calling all these boys up, and Dr. Seuss was the 10th guy there waiting. Theodore had only been given 9 medals.
No.
So it got to medal number 10. Theodore went up on stage in front of his parents and all these like hundreds and hundreds of people applause. And Teddy Roosevelt just went, what on earth is this boy doing here? And then the Boy Scout leader jumped on stage and dragged him off stage to save embarrassment. And he said from that point onwards, he always had a crippling fear of public appearances.
I find it a bit weird that the president's reaction on seeing there were 9 medals and 10 people dressed as Boy Scouts, they would assume the 10th person is an imposter. Rather than saying, are you sure we haven't got the wrong number of medals?
Yeah.
That's a really good point. I read this recently. Anna, you might know this. I don't know if it's true or not, that there are 2 Roosevelts, but one of them was actually pronounced the name Roosevelt.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah. I can't remember which is which, but one of them is, let's say, Franklin D. Roosevelt, and the other one is Theodore Roosevelt, or the other way around. I can't remember.
Why? Because they're obviously, they're obviously related, so why would they have changed it?
I believe it's like different branches of the family, and this branch of the family called themselves Roosevelt, and this branch called themselves Roosevelt. I've not looked it up, I just heard it.
War of the Ruses.
So this movie that you're talking about, is it true that we're not 100% sure that it definitely was Dr. Seuss who wrote it? As in, there was no credits or anything
like
that?
Yeah, no credits. They didn't ever credit them.
Top secret.
But there was a whole range of them, most of which were written by Dr. Seuss.
Most of them apparently were written by him. But the reason we think this particularly is because of the meter of the lines. Yep. Because it sounds like a lot of his kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's called anapestic tetrameter. and it goes ba ba bum 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 ba ba bum.
Green eggs and hat.
Green eggs and hat. And it rhymes. But apparently, this is that kind of meter, and he always wrote in that kind of meter. Other people, apparently, according to Wikipedia, who have this meter include Byron's Don Juan. Apparently, that has it, and also Eminem in "The Way I Am."
The Way I Am rhymes also with green eggs and ham.
That's a nice link, isn't it? Like carving a path from Byron to Dr. Seuss, 100 years later to Eminem, 100 years later.
Yeah,
I really like that.
Dr. Seuss in 1931 illustrated a book called "The Pocket Book of Boners."
Was it a pop-up?
What sort of boners?
Boners in those days meant like a mistake, like a blooper kind of thing.
Yeah, it still does, doesn't it? Sort of. I mean,
no.
I wouldn't Google it.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Okay, time for our final fact, and that is from James.
My fact is that the phrase, "Why is my poop green?" is Googled most commonly between 5 and 6 in the morning.
God, I thought I erased my history. At what time?
Between 5 and 6 a.m. So this comes from an article in the New York Times by a guy called Seth Stevens Davidovich. And it's just a brilliant article with loads of times when it's most likely that people Google things. What I don't mean by that is this is when it's most often. It's more common for people to Google it at that time than it is for them to Google it at any other time. So the percentage of people searching Google for the word lonely peaks at 3:24 a.m.
Well, they're all doing it at the same time, so we need to bring them together.
Oh, yeah, so you're actually the least... If you're feeling lonely, that's when you're actually least lonely, because everyone is feeling it too.
But they should have an I'm feeling lonely button next to the I'm feeling lucky button. It should pair you up with a random person.
That's called chat roulette.
Oh, yeah. And that's lots of boners.
Yeah. And the phrase, how to put on a condom, peaks at 10:28 p.m.
Yeah, I love that, because that's really sweet that people are doing that. Because before, we had to have like really awkward lessons in year nine with our English teachers who told us. I think it's better
English
that you get
teacher.
To ask Google.
You should have been the sex ed teachers, really.
They always doubled up. They were very similar.
Actually, yeah, we had our guidance teachers, I think.
Yeah, and bring hockey sticks in. Chew hockey sticks?
No.
Expectations were very high.
I did it at your school.
Yeah.
And bent at the end.
Yep. Actually, this is slightly off topic, but speaking of, you know, girl-boy differences, I was at a pub quiz this week and there was a picture quiz and one of the pictures was, what brand is this?
Joe Brand or Russell Brand?
All right, yeah, good one. Yeah, so you would have given the funny answer and not got a point. The brand was a picture of a Tampax packet with everything on it except the word Tampax. Yep. And I was on a team with three boys and they were all looking at it going, I've never seen that before.
Actually, I read a thing once that said that the reason why some men will go to the fridge and say, oh, I can't find the cheese, and you have to go and say, it's right there, is because a man's brain is more likely to look for, if you're looking for cheese, looking for C-H-E-E-S-E. And so if the cheese is upside down or on the side, it's not what you're looking for.
If you want to hide from a man, stand on your head.
If you shave men, they can't recognise each other. And then they have to fight to see who's the best.
See who's the leader.
Wow, that is quite something. Also, I must say, of all the cheese that I buy, usually it's not labelled with the massive word cheese. On the front.
Again, we're not in a cartoon. The first Google computer, the first database, they built a computer housing for it with fans and a cooling system out of Lego.
Did they?
You can see a picture of it. So they've still got it. It's in like, you know, a glass display case and it's all multicolored. So it kind of looks like the Google logo.
The word Google is an anagram for Go Lego.
Coincidence.
Oh my God.
I had a look at other sort of clever internet things and things you can track. So there's this guy called Steve Warswick who has built a chatbot called the Mitsuki. So Mitsuki works by you ask her a question and then she has, every time someone talks to her, she learns appropriate responses and she can search for things and tries to think of a good thing to say back to you. So I asked if she knew any facts, thought it might be a good shortcut to do my work.
Now we're all out of a job.
And she told me that butterflies taste with their feet.
Oh yeah,
quite good.
That's been in one of our books.
And maybe she's read them. And that cats can hear ultrasound. which I thought was quite good.
Yeah.
So then I tried to teach her a new fact, that bananas are slightly radioactive. She said, "What makes you say that?" I said, "Oh, never mind." And then we tried a little longer. But what I like is that obviously I was using it to try and do my work, where people probably are using it as an online girlfriend, let's be honest. And so I said, "Shall we try again, me teaching you the fact?" And she said, "Once more, do you mean you and me? It may require an alteration in my personality." I said, no, I meant the fact about bananas. it is very fun. I recommend you all try out Mitsuki.
A couple of facts about what happens when you Google something. So if you Google something now, that's one of 3.5 billion things that people Google every day. 20% of those things have never been Googled before.
That is interesting, Alex, but why is my poop green?
It would be 40%, again. But you keep asking that. Then your query takes 0.2 seconds to go 1.5 thousand miles and go through 1,000 computers to get your results. I just find that completely mind-blowing.
Yeah.
We have access to those incredible resources.
These are so easy, but they are amusing. You know the old Google autofill when people send in their Google autofills for them?
Yeah.
Just a couple of my favourite ones. So someone typed in, "Is it N, letter N?" And the suggestion is it normal for my left nipple to be bigger than my other two? Someone typed in to Google, "If I," and the letter A, and the first suggestion was, "If I ate myself, would I be twice as big or completely disappear?"
Wow.
That's good.
Deep.
It's really good, isn't it? Yeah. Nobody knows. Someone typed in "my" and then the letter B, and the suggestion, first suggestion from Google is, "My balls are stuck in my Xbox."
And my ex is not happy.
Okay, that's all of our facts. We'll be back again next week with another episode of No Such Thing as a Fish. And in the meantime, you can get these guys on their Twitter handles, which are Anne.
At @Miller_Anne.
James.
At @Eggshaped.
Alex.
At @AlexBell_.
And you can email me at podcast@qi.com. All right, until next week then. Goodbye.